Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
So welcome to the new series of podcasts by Vox Markets. And within this series, we intend to hear from industry leaders who are going to educate the market on their specialist sector. We'll be providing in-depth conversations using experts on their chosen topic, and the podcast series will allow the opportunity for listeners to submit their own questions, which will be asked throughout the interviews. So hello, welcome to the podcast today. Today on the podcast, we have Paul Griffiths, who's the CEO of Predator Oil and Gas. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you.
So Paul has extensive knowledge in the CO2 enhanced oil operations, and he has two assets. One of the assets is based onshore in Trinidad, and one of them is offshore in Ireland. So today, Paul, I want to kind of figure out why you've chosen those two locations for the assets that you have. And also, I want you to tell us a little bit about the CO2 extraction of oil.
Well, I guess it comes from my experience, my 40-odd years experience in the business in 21 different countries. I know how to sniff out an asset, basically. And in Trinidad, there was an opportunity, I thought, particularly onshore, to utilize the CO2 that's currently vented into the atmosphere to produce more oil from some of the aging oil fields. And in an island, which I've been involved with for over 30 years now, I knew that there is an opportunity to monetize discoveries now, given the fact that there's infrastructure there, gas gathering infrastructure there. And the fact that gas price now is 50-55% more today than it was a year ago on this day. So it creates a new commercial model. And having that knowledge, that 30 years background offshore Ireland, is very important for selecting those assets that would be most suitable to monetize.
So kind of going to the onshore in Trinidad, can you just explain the process? Just as a disclaimer, I don't know an awful lot about CO2 extraction and oil. But what I quite, maybe you can just explain a little bit how that process works and why would you use CO2 to get oil out of the ground?
Well, if you take the starting point that you go into a field, you start producing oil, the oil normally flows naturally to surface and then flows under pump to surface. Then when that becomes more difficult and the pressures drop, there's not enough energy in the reservoir to bring the oil to surface, you then start to inject energy, if you like, into the reservoir. So you flood the reservoir with water. You push water at a higher pressure into the reservoir to drive more oil out. That's called water flood. And then when that's exhausted, there may still be anywhere up to 40 to 60% of the oil left in the reservoir because it simply can't move out of the reservoir. There's not enough energy to push it out of the reservoir. So when you inject CO2, the CO2 pressures up the reservoir, makes it higher pressure, but also the CO2 dissolves in the oil, making it less viscous, less sticky. And that means you can move that residual oil out of tighter rocks to the wellhead and let it flow to surface. So that's where effectively CO2 EOR is an attribute for developing the field.
So is this quite a common practice?
No, and the reason why it's not common, it's prevalent all over the United States, or most of the United States, central parts of the United States and Texas, where there is a cheap CO2 supply. And that's the key. This is a very, very costly operation because the CO2 costs a lot of money to, first of all, purchase and then inject into the ground. In the United States, for example, lots of CO2 is produced naturally and from industry, whereas in Trinidad vents into the atmosphere 300 million cubic feet of CO2 a day from their ammonia plants. You can't do this in most of Europe because of the cost of capturing CO2 from power plants. There's no natural sources of CO2, cheap sources of CO2. There's a project in Australia, there's a project in Hungary, and a project in China, but the biggest projects in the United States. And that's why we chose Trinidad, because it has this cheap nearby source of CO2.
So the regions that you just stated, they all seem to be quite landlocked. Is it always an onshore operation, or can this CO2 production be taken offshore?
where the problem in any, when you go from onshore to offshore, the costs escalate, whether it be CO2, drilling, whatever, because you're in a water environment, there are more issues with controlling whales. Mm-hmm. There are more issues with spending more money on development costs, etc. So CO2, because it's an expensive process in the first place, if you think about shipping, transporting CO2 in pipelines from onshore to offshore, and then injecting them in wells, the cost of actually doing that is orders of magnitude higher than doing it, for example, on the onshore.
And you say that it's an expensive process. I know that you're getting the residual oil out the fields, but what else are the benefits of doing it if it is so much more expensive? Why would you go down this route?
Well, it all comes down to the cost of the CO2. If you can get the cost of the CO2 down to a reasonable price, which we can in Trinidad, then the benefits are that you're increasing production, but most importantly, you're not spending a lot of capex on drilling new wells, not investing in drilling new wells. You're going into existing wells and putting the CO2 into those existing wells and producing from those existing wells. So although the operating cost is high, the amount of investment you need is much lower. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the return on your investment is much more quickly, because obviously you get cash flow more quickly, larger amounts for a small amount of capital spend.
So there are a lot of big players doing this in Trinidad?
No. Petroton, the state oil company, which is just undergoing a restructuring that was announced last week, they did some CO2 EOR back in the 70s and 80s. But at that time, the knowledge of transporting CO2 was limited. So it wasn't realized that CO2, when it's mixed with water, becomes mild acid, carbonic acid, and corrodes pipelines, etc. So the pipeline system they put in to take this CO2 to the local field got corroded and therefore had to be shut down for environmental reasons and health and safety reasons. And then since that time, because of that experience, nobody has tried it again on that kind of scale. And what we're doing is actually taking all the new technology that has developed on CO2 EOR over the years out of the United States, taking the greater understanding of health and safety issues and environmental issues, and applying that to scale up CO2 EOR now in Trinidad and to give it a second life after Petrotrim.
And so I know a lot of these exploring companies, they use previous pipelines and infrastructure and plumbing that's already in the ground. But obviously, if you're saying if you mix it with water, it then becomes an acid, right?
Yes.
So have you had to implement new pipelines, new infrastructure to be able to do this?
You will have to put in a limited amount of infrastructure. And the key parts of that infrastructure is that you can strip out the existing wells and convert them to be resistant to CO2 mixed with water. And that maybe costs $25,000 to $30,000. So that's not a huge operation compared to drilling a well for $1.5 million. Mm-hmm. And secondly, the little bits of pipeline that connect the wells to the tanks that collect the oil have to be coated, which is maybe an extra 30% cost over normal pipes. And most importantly, the tanks where you collect the oil have to be coated against erosion as well, corrosion as well. And you also need to monitor the separation of the CO2 from the oil to ensure the CO2 doesn't get into the infrastructure, the Petroton infrastructure or the local infrastructure beyond the wellbore. Now, that's all very manageable and is a relatively small cost. The biggest cost of the operation is buying and injecting the CO2.
Okay. And obviously, the location of Trinidad, is there any, say, political factors that may affect production over there at the moment?
Well, not from the point of view of Trinidad, in the sense that Trinidad has been producing oil for nearly 100 years. It's one of the world's biggest, has been one of the world's biggest producers of oil. Wow. Prior to, for example, Saudi Arabia mm-hmm. and the Middle East. So just by example, the onshore fields have produced over 1 billion barrels of oil over the years. So also Trinidad is one of the world's leading producers of LNG. So this is not your typical Caribbean holiday island. This is a very industrialized island that has a long, long history of oil and gas business. So from the political side is the economy of Trinidad is pretty much wholly dependent on, dare I say it, the fossil fuel industry.
Okay.
And that's kind of a good example, if I might digress slightly, in the sense that our fossil fuel industry is getting quite a bit of a hammering at present, as we know, from renewables and the green strategy. But you have to understand that the impact on a country like Trinidad of ceasing fossil fuel exploration today would be devastating. So we have to have a transition period. And therefore, by collecting the CO2, injecting it into the ground, producing some more oil, it's kind of win-win. We have some green credentials by taking the CO2 out of the atmosphere, but we're also supporting and boosting the local economy by increasing oil production.
How dependent are you? I know that you said the price of CO2 is fundamental to the production, but really, how dependent is the whole process relying on the cost of CO2?
It depends on the price of oil. That's okay. The key thing. You know, at current oil prices and perhaps $40 to $50 a barrel, CO2 is cost effective. The advantage is that you don't have a big capital spend, so you can afford to invest in CO2 and upscale it and inject it into the ground. But obviously, if the oil price falls down to $25, $30 a barrel, then everything becomes much more marginal, and you then have to drive the CO2 price down. I mean, in theory, the CO2 should be free because it's actually polluting the atmosphere. But as yet, Trinidad doesn't have any kind of carbon credit system. But I suspect that's coming in the not-too-distant future. The Caribbean.
I mean, I was going to ask you, is there a particular price in which that your production would, say, pause? Or if the price of oil goes up, the price of an oil barrel goes up, sorry, will you ramp up production as well? Do you fluctuate your levels of production really depending on the price of a barrel? Or is it something that you don't change your day-to-day?
I think bigger companies may well attempt to do that. But the bottom line is, as a small cap producer, ultimately producer, you really just want to be pumping oil all the time. Mm-hmm. And you know our business is a cyclic business. Oil price goes up, oil price goes down. If it goes down, it always goes up again. So you just have to live through the cycle, basically, and manage the cycle.
It is very interesting. I mean, there was a big tsunami as well. Not necessarily a tsunami. There was a big storm, wasn't there, that hit Trinidad a few years ago. Did that affect?
That was a long time ago. Trinidad probably once every 25 years gets a major storm. So it's not in the hurricane window of the Caribbean. In fact, when the hurricanes hit the Caribbean and Gulf of Mexico, all the rigs from the Gulf of Mexico come down to Trinidad for safe water. So that tells you that it's not an event that happens very often.
Okay. I mean, you briefly mentioned renewables and fossil fuels, and it's a hot topic, right?
Yes.
Have you seen any change in the industry with, you know, moving into the sort of renewables cycle? I know that you mentioned the CO2, but how has the oil and gas industry really been affected over the last, say, 10, 15 years?
Well, I think more so over the last, say, 3 to 5 years, as the power of internet, the power of Twitter becomes, and power of Facebook becomes a more powerful media weapon, a social media weapon to attack those parts of the industry, whether they be oil and gas companies or anybody else. It's an effective weapon, if you like, to maximize publicity. But the downside of that is that, of course, everybody wants to move to a green energy economy. That's without question. We all do, whether we're in fossil fuel or any other form of industry. That obviously is, you know, the long-term objective. But my argument would be that there has to be a transition. It has to be a transition from a dependence on fossil fuel to a total dependence on green energy. And therefore, we have to manage that transition. If we are to move in an abrupt way to fall off a cliff edge, similar to Brexit, then the downside of that is the world economy will be shattered. And there's no doubt about that. You cannot tell India, for example, or China has converted many power stations that are burning coal. China is not going to move to green energy overnight. That will take time. So this will not happen in the time framework people seem to be trying to impose on the industry. And the economic consequences of that will be catastrophic. And I'd like people to focus on that. It's all very well talking about new generations, and if there's nobody left around to form those new generations, well, then what's the purpose?
So are you seeing any change? Are you slowly making that transition well, phase at the moment?
We see changes in the majors and in the sense now that there's a greater focus on gas. And that's because gas produces roughly 30% less CO2 emissions than coal or oil. So that's a cleaner fuel, and that seems a very sensible way to go. And also, most of the majors are developing, if you like, a renewable arm in terms of wind energy and solar energy. We are doing our bit in the sense that we are focused on gas in Ireland, which is a cleaner energy, and we are focused on trying to take CO2 out of the atmosphere. Okay to produce some oil, but that oil will be produced ultimately anyway one day without CO2 perhaps, or will just be shut in the ground. So we are kind of, you know, trying to green ourselves a little bit, but in a sensible, practical way as a transition to green energy, not as a cliff face, if you like.
By the sounds of it, you seem to have spread bettered, if you can use such a term, that you have also got one hand in the gas industry, which is more along the lines of the renewable source than the oil industry, which I guess is a great position to be in.
Yes, I think, you know, we would have classified ourselves years ago as oil explorers. Mm-hmm. You know, that was first and foremost the core of the fossil fuel industry, whereas I think we're now moved to trying to become more responsible explorers, focusing on gas. But also, you know, there's a very good reason for that, is that I don't necessarily develop an overall strategy that is consistent with sort of modern trends. You have to find the assets that partly fit that strategy, but partly that you have confident will actually be monetized, will actually create money for your shareholders. Because no matter what I say about green energy or fossil fuel, the bottom line is the shareholders put up the money, and they're putting up that money because they expect a return.
Okay, so at the beginning you said you were good at sniffing out a good asset. Tell me, how do you sniff out a good asset?
How?
Yeah, what do you look for?
I've always taken for granted where I came from in terms of education. I was lucky enough to go to the Royal School of Mines, Imperial College in the 70s, when it was probably on an equal with the Royal School, Colorado School of Mines. So it gave me a fantastic foundation in the science. And then I went to Libya for 3 years in much easier circumstances than these days, because mm-hmm. the Americans were still there. So that gave me a fantastic base, if you like, to visualize assets, what would be a good asset. And the trick is, some people are geophysicists, some people are geologists, some people are commercial, some people are lawyers. I've blended all those different facets of the industry into a single model, if you mm-hmm. like. And as an example, I won't name the company, but someone can guess if they go back through my track record. I was sitting outside a pub one Friday afternoon with my joint operating agreement, which is an agreement that you write between the companies, etc. And I was having a conference call in my pub setting with a lawyer in Washington, a lawyer in New York, and a lawyer in Houston. And the bottom line is, I won the argument on the joint operating agreement based on my experience and my background. So I don't say that for any other reason that you have to have, in my view, the wide understanding of the industry, all aspects of the industry. And then that puts you in a preeminent position to say, well, that's a good project. No, I don't like that project. It's not just about geology. It's about commercial issues. It's about legal issues. It's about government relations. It's about all these things. If you can mold that all into one entity, whether that be a company or a person, then you've got a fantastic tool for sniffing out projects and also for getting those projects at a reasonable price.
Okay, so I know that you've got two assets now, as I mentioned. Are you looking to expand that portfolio?
No, we're focused on our current portfolio simply because you can make a mistake of getting too many assets too soon in a company. I hold my hands up I did that in the past. We built a tremendous position, for example, in Ireland Oil and Gas back in 2007, 2008. But we got stretched. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you take a step back years later, you realize, well, no, I should have focused on that, 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 and not this. So we're focused on two things at present, and we're very comfortable with that position.
Very good. Well, I think on that note, Paul, it's been very interesting talking to you.
Thank you. For
and learning it, you know, about the CO2. It's something that I personally didn't know an awful lot about. And it does sound like it's got a lot of potential as well.
Definitely.
So thank you very much for coming in today. And it's good to hear your thoughts.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.